Have to or whatever. Thank you for having me. My name's Dave. A couple of things. Have your zine in front of you there, which is this funny thing. Have I got light in my face? Hopefully I haven't. No, is that I'm good? Yeah, I'm good. Okay. And do you have that open on that page three there? That lovely image of that lamb or that sheep. These little green things, give to your friends. If you like what you're hearing this evening, you want to invite people to hear about more poetry from the Bible, Psalms, give this to your friends, yeah? And the third thing, which I don't have, is a talkback form. If you've got a talkback form on your table there or in your zine, pull it out. And also, the fourth thing is have a pen or a pencil. Should be one on your table. Do have one open because you want you to write on the zine. Write on it, graffiti on it, do stuff on it because that's how we interact, yeah? And it's nice that this group's small because the series is called Up Close and Personal. This is Up Close and Personal. I think it's nice, right? Okay, let me start. So we talk about poetry. That's really cool because I do love poetry, but I love modern poetry. And bottom left, okay, a rapper. He's a rapper, okay, a musician. He's not alive anymore. His name is Notorious B.I.G. Have you heard of him before? Notorious B.I.G.? I love Notorious B.I.G. He put out a song, right, in the last sort of decade called Mo Money, Mo Problems. Mo meaning more, right? More money, more problems, right? And in the film clip for this song, the rapper reflects upon, if you have more money, you're going to have more problems. More money, more problems. Because he in the clip he's talking and he's saying, look, with more money, there's envy, there's jealousy that comes with the territory of having more money. And so, Biggie's, Notorious B.I.G., Biggie's was an extremely successful rapper for his time. Obviously, he spent a lot of time worrying about the problems associated with his wealth and success. Now, the top right image, who's that? Do you know who that is?
Rupert
Murdoch. Yeah, hopefully the news channel was a bit of a clue there. Rupert Murdoch, okay, Australian multimillionaire. Okay, he's loaded, right? Now, he was asked in 1983, that's a long time ago, I was just born then, right? If there would be a stage in his life where he would have made enough money and had enough power. Was there going to be enough money and enough power he would have in his life? And Murdoch kind of returned a look to this person, wondering if they were slightly deranged. He's kind of like, what do you mean, you know? And he just continued to talk about business, right? It's kind of like a nothing, right? Both men in this slide, okay, were concerned about how others would take them over, or perhaps even concerned about how they were going to take over the next person or other people. Obviously constantly concerned and worried about their money and success. And I wonder if we're kind of the same. We're constantly thinking about the next big thing in our lives. How are we going to succeed in life? How will I make a name for myself with the degree that I've graduated with at uni? You know, I personally, still today, I've graduated a long time ago. I've done 2 degrees. I still struggle with this. I still do today. I spend more time worrying about what I can do on my own and less about what God has done for me, let alone for anybody else around me. You know, is God really going to help me out of my worries and out of my concerns? You know, did God ever listen to people ever before? Does he even listen to people today? This is the topic. This is the series we're looking at, okay? Over the next couple of weeks, different speakers. I'm not the whole speaker for the whole series. We're going to look at the Psalms, which are a collection of songs, prayers, and reflections by various people, okay? And they have the same concerns and worries as we do. The same. Except they're directed their thoughts towards God. And I hope through this public talk series, right, I hope it's going to prompt you to think more about the big questions of, you know, does God actually care about me today? Does he actually care? Does he actually listen to people? And is it worthwhile speaking to him in the good times and in the bad times? And to begin, we've just read this psalm, okay, on page 3, from a man named David, okay? Pop quiz, who could this David be?
Lewis.
Not me, no. Sorry. David who? Who's this David? Shout it out. He's a king. King David, right? King David of Israel. Okay? And he understood, from this psalm, he understood, you can tell he understood the place of God, the place of God in his life. Okay? He was a man that probably was more successful, more wealthy than Notorious B.I.G. and Rupert Murdoch put together. Okay? He was the king of a nation which would eventually become a superpower. And his approach to God through this psalm, what we've just read, it's teaching us that God knows, he listens, and he cares for us and about us. And these are the reasons why we should pray to him. So as we work through this psalm 23, keep it open, we learn about David's thinking and approach to God, and that's a good model for us as we share with God our personal thoughts and our lives with him, because we know that he cares. So there are two kind of distinct sections, okay? It is poetry, so they sort of do mesh with each other, but they're kind of two sections. The first section, okay, verses 1 to 3, that's the first section we're going to look at now. David here, he's addressing God, right? And it shows in the way he speaks about God and the special place he has in his own life. See, David here, he shows great respect to God by using his personal name, Yahweh, and he calls him the shepherd. Let's unpack these things, okay? What these descriptions mean. Firstly, the word there, the Lord, translated Yahweh, is the personal name of God, okay? You know, God has a lot of different names he's referred to in the Bible, a lot of descriptions. But David, right, he uses this particular version of God's name. This particular version. And it represents his intimate relationship with the God of the universe. It's kind of like how people meet me for the first time, right? Okay, I introduce myself as David. Okay, David is my name. But once you get to know me a bit better, yeah, you can start to call me Dave. As you interact with me, Dave, okay, in Australians, we tend to shorten names, don't we? And then if you know me as a husband or a father, which is pretty much no one here, okay? Yeah, there's other particular names, which I won't share, okay, that they would know me by, they can call me, right? Because they are names exclusively used by those people. And Yahweh, right, is the name exclusively used by the people who know God personally. He's not just a God out there somewhere, but a God who is intimately known. That might seem bizarre, right? Okay? An all-big, all-powerful, almighty God who is knowable, personal, like a good friend, a father, or a motherly figure, a person who knows you inside out. This is the God of the Bible. This is who he is. And it leads to the second description there, in that first line there, that David uses, which is that he uses the word shepherd to describe God. God is his shepherd. Now, shepherds, right, obviously take care of sheep, right? That's how we generally know them to be, right? Sam was joking, we should have brought a sheep in maybe and we could have had a go at shepherding ourselves, right? Shepherds caring for the flock, talking to them. Okay, it seems like a really peaceful job. He looks kind of peaceful there, talking with his sheep, doesn't he? Easy job. You know, sheep are pretty compliant, aren't they? Yeah. But the truth is, shepherding is actually, it's not necessarily a gentle job. It's actually a tough job. It's a rigorous job. Okay, if you were a shepherd in the ancient world, obviously this guy's not from the ancient world, but if you're a shepherd in the ancient world, you need to command your sheep, okay, to go to places to get food and water. You need to have to lead the flock to safe areas. If one gets stuck in the mud or in a bush, you got to go back there and physically lift the sheep up, out. Get them out of trouble. Otherwise, a predator is going to come and attack them. And speaking of predators, another thing that shepherds do is they've got to be on watch against predators. Okay? Wolves and stuff like that. You know, you've got to fight off the animals that want to eat the sheep. And not with guns. You haven't got guns. You've got a rod. Okay? You've got to beat them with a rod. You've got to protect the sheep. That's their job, right? And so David uses the name Yahweh and the title shepherd to describe God as his personal leader, all right? Someone whose leadership he can fully trust. God is the shepherd who provides his daily needs. God is the shepherd who is his personal defender and protector against his enemies. And we read in the Old Testament, all through the Old Testament, how God has proven himself to be a personal God, interacting with Israel through the prophets and showing himself in his amazing glory. But also we read about God shepherding his people by leading them out from slavery through the desert and into the promised land. And the next few verses here, from verses 2 and 3 on your zine here, describe how God is personal Lord, or Yahweh, and is David's shepherd. Have a look with me in verses 2 and 3. I'm going to read it. It says, "He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake." You see, God is leading David to places where he can be nourished and cared for. Green or lush pastures for food, which sustains him, water for hydration, but also they're quiet or still waters that will give him calmness. They'll give him peace and rest. And the result is not that just David would feel better in his physical life, all right, but actually his soul or his life force is refreshed. For what purpose, for what reason that God does this? Well, to show us that in living for God, we will receive ultimate provision, sustenance, protection, and peace. That when you hear God's name, Yahweh, you think of ultimate provision, ultimate sustenance, ultimate protection, and ultimate peace. I wonder if this is what you're after today. Is this what you're craving for right now in the midst of a busy, worrisome life? You know, we spend so much time planning and thinking about how we can make provision for ourselves, how can we be most fulfilled, have the most amazing life experiences, right? Perhaps you're striving for a peaceful life. You want to create a better world that is more good. But when we don't get what we want, or the plans don't turn out the way that they were, that we thought they were going to come out, or that they would be planned, do we get angry or disappointed? And do we direct this at God and say to him, "Hey God, why didn't I get thing?" You know, or "God, this is what I really want out of life. This is what I desire. I've asked you, but you're not giving to me. Why?" Now, I just want to say, just as a side point, I think it's good, you know, to put forward those things in your life to God that are your desires and your thoughts, just as you would to any other person, you know, in an exclusive relationship that you have with, a significant relationship. It's good to pledge it to God. But when we spend so much time worrying about it, being concerned about these things, I think we kind of overlook the ultimate things that God has provided. We overlook the kind of the bigger picture of our lives that God has planned for us. And personally, if I find myself worrying too much about this life, about my life stage right now, I feel overwhelmed. I feel so much unrest. I even lose sleep over it. But are these paths that we walk in life, right? Are they the right paths that are led by God? How are these paths that we walk in life ultimately lead to his provision, his sustenance, his protection, and his peace? Remember, David, he was a king of the nation of Israel, right? He probably had everything that he ever wanted. But he begins this psalm acknowledging God as his personal Lord and as someone who is his shepherd of his life. Because David understands what God is capable of doing and what he has planned for his life. That was a person who probably had everything already he needed, everything. But only through God, he lacked nothing. We see a change in the psalm here from verses 4 to 6, where David shares his struggle in life, but he's still certain of God's presence in his life. Now, have a look carefully in verse 4 here. How do you think it hooks or changes from the first three verses to the fourth verse? What do you notice here? What do you notice? Particularly the person number, or the direction. Shout it out. What do you notice? Any thoughts?
Goes from he to I.
Yeah, that's one part. So he talks more about himself, I. Yeah, but he uses the word, he also uses I there. But what about the second half of verse 4?
You.
You. He uses the word you. Okay, that's helpful, Sam. Thanks. So David now is full on directing his prayer to God personally, using the pronoun you. Okay? That's pretty deep. He's speaking personally, honestly, about his life to God. And verse 4, it's indicative, right, here, where David is at in his life. He wants to lie down in green pastures. He wants to be by quiet waters. You can't expect him to be already because, you know, he's the king of a whole nation, right? But if you have read the Old Testament about David's life, his life was far from green pastures. His life was far from quiet waters. At times, it was a dry desert. It was rough seas. In his rise to becoming a king, okay, Israelites and foreigners were out to get him. He was always on the run. Even during his time as a king, David, during his kingship, he was always at risk of being taken over by up-and-comers and being attacked by his enemies. And from the psalm, at this point in his life, he's walking through the darkest valley. In other kind of Bible translations you might have read, it says that he was walking in the shadow of death, which is a very bleak description, right? Very bleak. But we don't know the exact kind of circumstances that he was in, right? But you can identify with him, can't you? You feel for him. You can identify with him. He's in desperate need of help. And the only person he thinks that can help him is God. Because he knows God is with him. He doesn't need to fear evil because God is with him. God's rod and staff, again drawing upon the shepherd imagery, okay, shows that God is with David. The rod being an image of God defending against his enemies. The staff, an image of God supporting David, that is, in his life as he walks along God on these right paths. And David is assured of God's presence in his life because he knows that there's a spot for him on God's table where the oil, right, the oil is poured on his head to celebrate David's involvement in this special meal, that God's generosity is lavish because it makes his cup overflow. If you're a family in Japan, and I read this on Facebook today, someone heard a Christmas song today, September, okay? You're a family in Japan and you're celebrating Christmas with all your family coming over to your place. The special meal that you're going to prepare is you're going to get a KFC bucket chicken. Now, when everyone is at your place eating this meal, you know it, Albert, hey, don't you? Bucket chicken, right?
Yeah,
okay? Everyone's at your place eating this meal. Very personal, intimate, special experience, okay? You invite people into your home to share in your personal space. You're joining together, eating KFC bucket chicken on your dining table in your home. And you're probably not going to do it with just anybody. Are ya? Okay? You're talking with each other as you share in this amazing meal. And KFC, you know, it's going to open up people. Right? It's going to make people talk deep stuff, personal stuff, right? The association you have over this meal is very personal. It's very personal. And David, right? He's looking forward to having this meal with God at God's table, which is at God's place. Probably not KFC though, okay? But he's looking forward to it, okay? He's looking forward to interacting with God on a deeper and more personal level in eternity. You know, and during the time of this psalm, David's attitude is reflecting the future reality by sharing something profoundly deep on where he's at with God, okay? Just in this one verse 4. And God, you know, he's proven himself in history that he is the real deal, okay? That he cares for people. People, you know, sometimes wonder, why do Christians pray to a seemingly sovereign God who doesn't seem to be active in an out-of-control world? Why do they do that? But actually, you know, Christians do pray to God because they know and have experienced a God who is in control and has displayed sovereignty in history. And for us today, sitting in this room now, we have the privilege of relating to God through the person of Jesus, who is God, who was God in the form of a person, who lived among us, among humanity, shared their experiences at first hand to intimately relate to his people. He died and was resurrected to life to be the ultimate shepherd to those who were seeking a personal relationship with God and to be wanting to be led to those green pastures and those quiet waters. We as busy people, full of unrest, only have the remotest chance of intimately knowing an amazing God because of this person, Jesus, who calls himself the Good Shepherd. And we have, if we have faith in this Good Shepherd, this opens up all the possibilities of you and me having an intimate relationship with God, where you share with him your most honest thoughts and struggles, and he gets to lead you in life. Is this something that you do regularly? If you know you are in God's presence eternally because you know Jesus, how your prayers to God are full expression of honesty and of deep sharing with him, both the amazing things in life, but also the difficult things in life. This brings us to our final verse, verse 6, where it continues to reveal David's attitude towards God, that he is certain of the love and care of God on his life, and that he is with him, with God forever in eternity. Verse 6, let's have a look at it. I'm going to read it quickly, which says, "Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." You see, David wouldn't be saying these things, okay? He wouldn't be praying this sentence if he didn't think that God was working in his life or showing him goodness and love, right? He wouldn't keep praying to God if he wasn't active in his life. In fact, what we see in this verse is that he's actually praying to God that he will continue to pour out goodness and love, not just for now, but for the rest of his earthly life. He wants to keep knowing God. He wants to keep knowing that he's there for him as he anticipates the day where he will be with God forever in his house, heaven. You see, God has done it all. He's done it all for you and for me. If you haven't noticed from the psalm here, okay, God is doing everything to preserve David's life. All David needs to do is to just respond to him. This is how we know God cares for his people and for his world. He's already done the work in holding out a friendship with us. But the question is, how are we going to respond to that? You know, are we willing to trust God with our lives, not kind of knowing exactly what will happen? Are we willing to trust God that he is sovereign, that he's got it covered regardless of whatever happens? You know, I would have never imagined that I would spend 8 years here at Credo, serving God at Credo, working with business. You know, I actually thought I'd be here for much longer, probably for the rest of my life, right? But to find out now that I'm leaving Sydney to go interstate to another state to further God's mission on another campus where I don't know anybody, I don't have any friends, I don't have any family there, you know, that's scary for me. But my wife and I are continuing to trust in God as we have been all this time. And at times we struggle to. We do struggle, but we know that God is sovereign. So I thought we'd just take a moment now, just on our table groups. Maybe you could do it in triplets, or you can, if you're smaller, maybe this table is one, maybe you guys is maybe three over there, three triplets over there. Just have a moment of sharing about how you know God is sovereign if you think he is sovereign? How do you know that? And why do you pray to him? How do you know God's sovereign? And why do you pray to him? Have a chat. Let's pull it in, guys. Maybe we'll start with this table. There's a lot more talking on this table. I think we had a whole bunch of introverts on this table here. That's okay. Does someone want to share, you know, share your what someone said, or how do you know God is sovereign, and why do you pray to him? Can you, someone just throw out something there?
The miracles Jesus performed.
Okay. And what about those? What about the miracles?
Just looking at the way Jesus had authority over creation, particularly calming the storm.
Yeah, right. Yep. Yep. So controlling nature.
Beyond our comprehension.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Cool. Great. What about the latter part? Why do you pray to him? Why would you pray to God?
I think it was similar to the sovereignty of God.
Yeah.
Seeing God's hand in fulfilling and kind of answering prayer in the past.
Yeah.
You kind of naturally go, well, yeah, I'll go back.
Yep. Yeah, sure. So knowing God's sovereign, you pray to him and he answers prayer. So you're just going to keep praying. Yep. Cool. Yep. We had a few. Someone said, sometimes we pray out of desperation. It's like, what the heck do I do? Like, help. Like, yep. Do we talk about anything else? God's sovereignty? Anything on there?
It was just Jesus again.
Yeah,
you talked about the resurrection
of Jesus. Yeah, that's how we know he's sovereign, because of Jesus. Yep. Yep. Cool.
Death, which is the big enemy, like in verse 4.
Yeah.
The darkest valley.
And you might fear evil, which is the ultimate evil is death. Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Yep. Cool. Before I finish, maybe I'll just pause for any questions about this. It's a pretty short psalm, but. And I'm not the strongest English student, but I'll try and decipher the poetry if you want. Any questions, any thoughts, comments, I don't know, anything? James?
Does it rhyme in the original language?
Yeah. I haven't looked at the original language, so I don't know.
Probably not.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think Hebrew poetry works differently than rhyming.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like a limerick, mate. Yeah. Yeah. And you read it differently. You read it right to left, not left to right. Anyway, yeah. But, yeah. I imagine it'd have, yeah, it's a different, culturally, it's a different type of poetry than what we're used to. But for Hebrew, for Jews, they would read it like, this is something special. This sort of prose and poetry, this sort of literature. Yep. Yep.
Dave,
Chris.
In verse 4,
yeah.
At the end of verse 4, why do you think David says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me?
Why do I think that? Yeah, I think it comes back to the idea of the shepherd thing, the shepherd being a protector, but a leader, which does provide comfort to an individual, and particularly he talks particularly about himself, being God being his protector and his leader. That just provides him a great sense of security, I think.
So it's the fact that you have a rod and a staff and you can protect me.
That's God's intention. Yeah. That his characteristics, just, and it's two of many, right? Two of a plethora, but he's just focusing on those two. Yeah, yep. Which are two kind of tools that shepherds use, I think. So it's drawing upon that imagery of the shepherd. Mm. Yep, so it's carefully constructed, I think. Yeah, he's using the same, like similar themes throughout the whole text, yeah.
saying that even just that first line, like, just because God is his shepherd, that's completely sufficient in itself.
Mm.
Like, he lacks nothing as long as he's got the shepherd.
He's got the shepherd, yeah. And it's got the Lord and shepherd in the same...
Yeah.
The same statement, almost. Yeah, the same part of that sentence. Yeah. Yep. I find that profound too. And knowing, it's hard to know, like I've said, it's hard to know what stage of his life he's written this psalm in. But if you know David's life being a king, like, yeah, to him to say that, that God is his Lord and his shepherd, not, you know, I've got an empire and I lack nothing. Yeah. It's pretty profound, yeah. Tom, yeah.
I'm wondering, not that I know my Old Testament too well, but is this one of the earlier references of calling God a shepherd, or is it very common beforehand?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to think back the first 22 Psalms. And I don't know, yeah.
Because I don't remember it happening in...
Who's got like, a search engine?
Well,
Exodus.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Have you got one sent?
I think what wasn't David's occupation...
Yeah, Gish was...
He was a shepherd. Yeah. So maybe that's something there. Some of the prominent people in the Old Testament, the ones that were followers of God, that were shepherds. Moses, yeah, he was tending sheep, yeah, as with Abraham and his sons. So your question is, is this the earliest form of shepherd?
Yeah.
In yeah.
About God. No, referring to God as a shepherd, rather than like, I don't know, king or...
Yeah, or Messiah or something.
Do you think there's a difference in calling him shepherd here rather than saying the Lord is my king?
Yeah. Yeah, to my knowledge, I think maybe unique for me, uniquely I've read this and I think, yeah, it's one of the first moments, I think. Like, I don't remember ever, I don't know, but ever the prophets calling God shepherd. David, yeah, uniquely I think calls him shepherd.
Do you think that changes the psalm rather than calling God king? If you replace shepherd with king, would it change?
Yeah, I think it would. I think it definitely would. Because king has definitely got an authoritative connotation, perhaps. Ruler? Yeah. Yeah. And it's got those connotations of being, because it's a monarchical, a monarch society. Patriarchal society. So, yeah, obviously the king has a certain role in the patriarch. But shepherd's much more down to earth. It's like almost like tradie, you know, like that. It's the opposite. Yeah, it's more grounded, it's more earthy. Yeah. So definitely, I think it's deliberate.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is amazing, I think. It's amazing. Yep. Cool. Any more questions? We'll talk more after. It's an amazing psalm, I think. It's a good one to start on. Let's conclude, yeah? Let's conclude and we'll get some dinner. Okay, we started today about whether God cares or listens to people today. David, right, from this psalm, he's the author, has had personal, physical experiences with God, and he kind of reflects and writes upon these experiences in his prayer to God, right? The great King David of Israel understood the place that God had in his life. You know, God was someone he could share personal and honest things with, and he knew that God was listening to him. And I think this is true for us today, okay? That God hasn't changed. He hasn't changed since David's time, thousands of years ago to now. And that we should understand that God knows, he listens, he cares for us. And these are the reasons why we should pray to him. Does anyone know who this guy is at the top there? Sitting up there? It's a bit stretched, isn't it? Who's that? Anyone know?
JFK,
okay? John Kennedy, President of the United States, okay? Now, being the President of the United States is a pretty massive job, as you would imagine, okay? Comes with a lot of power, doesn't it? But for someone so important and influential for a nation, not anybody just gets access to the President, okay? I couldn't just turn up to the White House ask to speak with President Kennedy, could I? Okay, if I tried to break into the Oval Office, into the White House Oval Office to meet him, I'm pretty sure, security all over me, okay? Tie me down, you know, whatever, like arrest me. I wouldn't be able to get through the front door of the White House. But who is the guy that it's underneath Mr. Kennedy there? Who's that? His son. His boy, right? He had a couple of kids, but that's his son, okay? Only someone like his son or one of his children would have the privilege of being in the Oval Office like that, in the present Oval Office. His son is allowed to hang under his father's desk while he's working and managing the affairs of his country. What a special privileged relationship this kid has with his father. And I wonder if this is how we perceive our relationship with God, special and privileged. You see, if we have faith in Jesus, we get to call God by his personal name. And we get to be the recipients of this overflowing generosity and to be led by the Good Shepherd. We won't lack anything. We won't need to fear evil. All God wants us to do is to speak honestly with him. Share about our lives with him. How does knowing this going to change the way you do this today? Friends, God knows. He listens. He cares for our needs. And these are the reasons why we pray to him.